Yeah, he looks like a dude. Fun and adventure. Let's just go with that.
Let's just not do it again.
Hey. Who knows, man? Yep. All right, let's talk about fun stuff today. It's fine. Yeah.
Greetings and welcome to another potentially useful episode of the TCAP Salute podcast. My name is Larry Burden, and she's noted how our tech department's been super chill since spring break. It's Danielle Brostrom. And joining us in the studio is our certainly useful special guest, NorthEd's REMC director, Pete Milne.
Nailed it.
Before we ask Pete to help us discover what REMC is about and how it may be the ultimate tech tool for teachers, let's seek to find our ultimate truth in this week's TCAP Salute moment of Zen. The power to question is the basis of all human progress. Indira Gandhi. And with that, thanks for joining us, Pete.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
If you could just start us up real quick, what is REMC?
Great question. And a question I feel like I am answering all the time still after 3 years of doing this. REMC stands for Regional Educational Media Center. We are a nonprofit that was started in 1969 with the goal of providing leadership to our schools, educational technology, and really driving it equity for all students in the state of Michigan. There are 28 REMCs in the state, so we're broken up into 28 pieces. Each part of the state has a REMC that helps to support their schools. And we really have three pillars of what we do. We provide professional learning, free of cost for our teachers so they can get their sketches and, again, that leadership that we talked about. We have materials that they can borrow from us, which sometimes I think is the most overlooked aspect of REMC, because I was 22 years elementary ed in this area prior to taking over REMC. And when I started my job, my first 2 months, I just kicked myself day after day for not using the REMC resources when I was in the classroom. And then we also have REMC Save, which a lot of our technology partners know about when it's discounted purchasing through the state of Michigan. Normally, when we have these big projects that have to go out to bid, you have to get three different bids. REMC Save kind of saves you the trouble of doing that by providing this discounted purchasing through the state. So most of the Chromebooks and technology that schools use, they purchase through REMC. And the way that it works is that 1% of everything that schools buy comes back to REMC that allows us to buy those materials that schools can borrow for free and provide the professional learning. So it's a great resource. It's been around for a while, but it, like you said, is one of those hidden gems that not everybody knows about.
Wow. You mentioned the materials piece, and there were all kinds of things that you wish you would have taken advantage of. What kinds of materials are we talking about?
So we have educational technology that schools can borrow from us and that we can actually go out and help them with. Lots of times I'm in classrooms working with 3D printers. Schools want to test out a 3D printer before they spend their own money to get those. They can borrow those from us. We can go in and help them design with their students and get the 3D printing started, that gradual release of responsibility kind of, where we come in and hold the hand for a little bit and then they take over and go. We have robots. We have all sorts of Lego coding kits that you can use, 3D pens, 3D printers. Book sets are still super popular. We have a lot of schools that borrow book sets from us. Don't have the money to have a whole class set of books, but we have a huge lending library that they can borrow from us. The list goes on and on.
You mentioned that equity was a pillar of what you do. How does that work into all this?
So every project that we do has to have statewide ramifications so that all of the focus isn't on the big cities in Michigan getting all of the support, but we make sure that our schools in the UP and some of our smaller schools have somebody who can come in and work with them or provide that professional learning that they might not get at their own district.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Are you doing this by yourself?
No, I have a partner in crime over at REMC, Danielle Humphrey, and she is tech unicorn, doer of all great things. We've got a lot of asynchronous professional learning that we do right now because teachers don't have the bandwidth to come full day or come after school now to get that learning. And we want to respect their time and really provide resources that they can learn at their own pace. Danielle has been doing amazing things with Canva. If you go to NorthEd and go to the professional development page at NorthEd, you can find a lot of our asynchronous trainings that we have there. And we partner a lot with our MyStem in our area. So we just got a new MyStem director. And the statewide group that I'm a part of, I was just came back from Mount Pleasant. I was there for 2 days as the REMC organization got together and kind of got ready for some of the things we're going to be doing this summer. That network of amazing people from around the state. That's one of my favorite things about this job is that I have all these people throughout the state that if I can't figure it out, I can reach out to, or they help share resources and trainings that they've done. Sarah Wood is one of my favorite people to reach out to always get help from. She's down in Kent County and does amazing things and is always willing to share.
What kinds of things are on your radar right now for REMC?
AI.
So you're not talking about AI at all.
Yep. Nope. Have not been talking about AI. So part of the AI visioning group at REMC, so the 28 directors, and then we have RITS members, instructional technology people that are associated with REMC as well. So we have different projects that we work on throughout the year, AI visioning being one of the big ones that has been happening right now. We're kind of looking back to see courses that we already have. Are there ways that we incorporate AI that makes sense without it just being an extra thing, but how it can improve on the PD that we already have? And then looking forward to how can we help not only teachers, but administrators, school districts in general, kind of wrap their mind around what AI is and how they can take advantage of that tool.
One of the questions I had for you was, what is the service area that you specifically serve?
Sure.
And related to that, or on top of that, are you seeing a difference in how those different districts are tackling the AI problem? What kind of responses are you getting from individual districts?
Yeah, so first question, my area is the North Ed area and then also encompasses Manistee. So I'm as far north as Elba, but then also have schools that we support down Bear Lake, that area as well. A lot of the North Ed schools are more likely to take advantage of our services because we are at the Career Tech building, which means that when people want to borrow stuff from us, their buses come to the Career Tech building. We just put stuff on buses, takes to the school. When the school's done with it, they put it back on the buses, they bring it back to us. We're housed right in the mail room at the Career Tech building. So in terms of how districts are approaching AI, I've been to so many districts to do that piece of like beginning of the year, what is AI, kind of giving them some background because it's been around for a year and a half now, really. Well, it's been around longer than that, but ChatGPT blew up about a year and a half ago and really brought that onto everybody's radar. So been to staff meetings, have done professional learning half days. I would say that most districts are kind of in the same boat right now of still trying to navigate what AI means for them and their students and their staff, trying to learn more. There is that hesitation, which is natural, but we've kind of shifted our gears from the what is AI approach when we're talking about it to now focusing on it's here, it's a tool, along with a lot of the digital literacy stuff that has been going on more recently. AI, I see, fits into that boat of this is a tool. If we teach our staff and students how to use it appropriately, it's going to hopefully be used for good. So we now in our shift have focused more on how can we help teachers to use AI to be more efficient in their work. Teaching gets all the mandates of, hey, here's a new thing you've got to teach. Here's a new thing you've got to be aware of so you can help your students with. Here's a new thing. AI is the first one that's come around that I feel can actually take some things off the plate without putting more on the plate, which I am excited about. We talk about efficiencies. We talk about effectiveness, just how can you be more effective in your lesson planning, being able to not have to be the expert on everything, but have a thought partner who can help you through and process your ideas. And then just the accommodations. That's the piece I'm most excited about. How can you use AI to accommodate all students, not just your lowest achieving students, but some of those students that have always needed that little push to do more. I see AI being able to help everybody just be a little bit more connected to the curriculum.
I love the way you frame that. This is the first time I've heard somebody frame it as potentially taking stuff away from teachers as far as extra responsibilities. this is really the first time where it's like, no, actually, this is going to be a net positive for teacher time. That's pretty darn cool. I also saw Danielle almost jump out of her chair as a cheerleader when you brought up digital literacy. So I don't know if you wanted to follow up on that at all.
Yeah, let's talk more about that. How does digital literacy fit in with AI? How do you see it?
Like I said before, it's a tool. A lot of the digital literacy stuff that we are doing, the students are online. The students are using these tools, but they're not always taught like, hey, you shouldn't be giving your name and password. Maybe not putting pictures out there of everything that you do. Organizations like Common Sense Media, who have resources that have been designed for digital literacy, now also are coming out with resources for appropriate use of AI and having those conversations with your students. When the calculator first came out, the conversations around that it's going to ruin education. When the internet first came out, how is this going to impact education? Students aren't going to have know how to do research anymore. They're not going to know how to use the card catalog. It's a new tool. We're having the same conversations and hesitation, but if we look at it as this is a tool, we're going to use it to help support what we're doing. Yes, there are things we need to be aware of. There are biases. AI has hallucinations where it gives you wrong information. I had it write a bio for me a few months back when we did Regional Staff Development Day, and I had to do a little bio for my presentations. It said that I won all these awards and had presented at these conferences. I hadn't. So I really wanted to meet that guy that it said that I was. I kind of wanted to be that guy that it said that I was.
Life goals.
Yeah. Yeah. But those are the things that we need to make our students aware of, that this is not just, hey, we're going to plug this in, we're going to copy and paste whatever it says, and we're good to go. Because if we learn to use this tool and this chatbot as the idea of going back and forth with the chatbot versus just doing one search and being done, or doing a search and then looking through all these resources and nope, none of this is what I wanted. So now I need to go back and do a new search. There are so many possibilities.
That critical thinking piece that we have to layer on top of AI, I think is really exciting for me. You know, having the students doing that critical thinking and thinking about whether this is real or accurate or biased or what I need to do to change it. Like, that piece is really exciting because often we do just take what we see for granted. And that's that digital literacy piece that gets me excited about the use of AI. You mentioned like going in and making changes and asking questions and like a chatbot. I know you've done a lot of work with what we call prompt engineering. Can you talk more about that? Because I think I have a lot to learn about how to ask better questions of AI so I can get out what I really need.
Prompt engineering is 100% the secret sauce in using AI. The idea is that the better the questions you ask, the better the answers that you're going to get. But that's not natural to us right now, how much we have to put into this. I was at a conference a while ago where someone said that if you haven't seen a 500-word prompt, you haven't seen a good prompt yet. And for all the prompting that I've done and used AI, I've never once created a 500-word prompt. So it's really just crafting inputs that prompt the AI models towards desired responses. There are a lot of resources out there right now that help you create a better prompt. One of the models that I really like right now is they say prep is what you do first, and then you edit. And prep is you have your prompt, you give the AI a role. I am a teacher. I am a third grade student. I am a secretary who's trying to do blank. So you give it a role. Tell it what you want it to, what you want it to act like. Explicit with what you're looking for. And then you give it some parameters. So you give it some guardrails to help guide it where you want it to go. And one of my favorite things to do when I'm in front of teachers is to show them the difference. So I will go into Google and I'll just Google the word photosynthesis. And it will bring up some pictures and it'll bring up all these different websites that I could go to learn about photosynthesis. And previously, that is the way that we would research a topic, look something up. And then I'll pull up Chat or Gemini or one of the chatbots. And I will say, I'm a third grade student who really likes football. Explain photosynthesis to me in football terms. And it will start kicking out this whole list of explaining how photosynthesis is like the game of football. So you tell them that you're a third grade student. So it's going to level what it's kicking out to your grade level. You bring in some of your interests. Okay. I really like football. Maybe I have no interest in photosynthesis, but if they explain photosynthesis to me in a way that uses terms that I already am into, and after you're done with that, instead of doing your Google search where you do photosynthesis and nope, none of these websites are what I wanted, the chatbot has the search at the bottom so you can continue having this conversation. You could be like, this is still too complex for me. Summarize it for me. Or you, depending on which chatbot you're working with, you can ask it to give you images or turn this into a song. Or there's so many ways that you can go to try to better understand it or bring your interests into it so that you better understand what it's talking about. And then that edit piece at the end, you really need to kind of evaluate what has been produced from the AI. You're not just going to take it and be like, yep, this is perfect. This is exactly, I'm just going to copy and paste this and be done with it. Because that's where we really get into that academic dishonesty piece that teachers are worried about. And then we have determine, is this information that it's showing me correct? Are there hallucinations in here? Do I need to go somewhere else and kind of get some more background on this topic? You identify any points that you don't want to include in there, and then you transform it into your own. It's, you need to make this your own. It's not just about the chatbot doing the work for you. Continuously, they talk about the 80-20 model with AI, where AI should do about 80% of the work, but 20% of that work you still need to do. Some of it's going to be on the front end with your prompting. Some of it's going to be on the back end with looking at, does this make sense? And then transforming it into what works best for you.
How do you get good at this?
Practice. We don't really know everything that AI can do yet, because there are people who get frustrated with their prompting and just kind of give up instead of pushing on. There are resources out there that help you with prompt engineering. Eric Kurtz just came out with his most recent email that he sent out from his Control-Alt-Achieve. He has created like a super prompt that really shows you what it looks like to write one of those in-depth prompts, and that you can take his super prompt and like...
So almost like Mad Lib it.
Exactly. That's what I was looking for, where he gives you the parentheses and you have to put in what you're looking for, that being explicit with what the role is and what you want it to do, and that it will come out. And there are Google Docs and different things that you can look at that have really detailed prompts that you can go and pull from if you're not a super great prompt engineer. And then there are also some AI sites that are designed to help teachers who are not great at prompt engineering yet. Magic School, School AI, they have some fill in the blanks where you don't have to do the prompting, that they have already set some of those roles and say, you just drop down, pick what grade level you want, what's the subject area, and it will kind of do the work for you and do some of the prompting for you.
I think this is where maybe people of our age, and even students to some extent, maybe struggle with prompting, is the difference between a prompt and a search query. I think we're so used to doing Google searches, and even if we're efficient at Google searches, this is how you would do it. And we try to bring that same methodology and that mindset into our prompts. And that is not utilizing an AI in its best way. How does the Google search engine differ from an AI? And I know at some point in time, they're probably going to merge with Gemini, but what are some of those differences?
Good question. So there are a lot of people I talk to that are, even though they know of AI, like some of the Ramsey folk, are still so used to Googling. Like Google became a verb for us. It's something that we just as a group have done so frequently, that remembering that, oh, I should just use the chatbot to do that. And the biggest difference is chatbots have been fed all of this data that they kind of look through. And what some people still misunderstand about AI is that the AI is thinking for itself. It's not really thinking for itself. It's really predictive. So based on what you type in there, it is predicting like what is going to be the best answer for you. It's not really thinking for itself. It's not Skynet yet. But the...
You had to say yet.
I had to say yet, because there are some people that still think that that is where we're headed. I'm not one of those people, but every time I go in and do the word bubble, ask teachers what comes to mind when you first hear of AI, almost every time, Terminator or Skynet is one of those options. So to your point, it's not one search and done, and then we need to do another search, and then we need to do another search. It's continuous. So whichever chatbot you're using, it keeps track of your conversations, and you can go back to conversations that you've been having and continue chatting. And the more that you interact with the chatbot, the better it understands kind of what you're looking for. The power of the chatbot is that it really is a thought partner. We've never thought of a Google search as someone you're working with, but the chatbot is really there to be someone that you can bounce ideas off of and ask questions and get to a deeper meaning.
Pete, these super prompts that you suggested from Eric Kurtz, they're really, really cool. For example, I'm looking at one that's a student writing feedback example where in the past, I might have just gone into a Gemini and written like provide feedback on the student writing and then given the writing. But this prompt from Eric Kurtz that I can literally just copy and paste is like, I am a blank teacher focusing on the subject area blank. I'm currently working on improving my students' writing skills specifically in the context of whatever. One of my key objectives is to fill that in. To support this, please provide feedback on the following student writing sample. Put in the writing sample, and then there are additional details, like it continues going. So like analyze the student's understanding of the topic, highlight strengths and suggest areas for improvement, evaluate the organization of the writing, consider introduction, identify any grammatical errors, comment on the writer's style and voice. Like it goes on. And I can see like, even at the bottom, things like please ensure the feedback is constructive. Where possible, provide examples or suggestions that I could guide the student in revising their work. I can literally just copy and paste this and fill in my own things until I get better at doing this myself. This is really, really good work.
Do not try to reinvent the wheel with this. There are tools out there, and that's why I bring up things like that. And every time I go in and talk to a group, I bring with me one of the resources I bring is just a link to prompts that they can practice. You don't have to be an expert at this. There are tools out there to help you get better. And the more that you do it, the better you're going to get.
How are you currently using AI in your job?
Most of the PD that I've done this year has either focused on AI or included AI as a part of what it does or what I do, trying to help teachers to better understand the technology and see the resources that are available to, again, improve efficiencies, effectiveness, and accommodations for students. I use it in helping to craft and respond to emails frequently. We had Wired TC last summer, and every one of our presenters who we invited to come and present at Wired got an email from me that was written 80% by a chatbot, which saves a lot of time. When I'm creating the schedule for a PD day or even looking at putting together the slide decks for the PD, AI frequently is used. Canva is one of our favorite tech tools to use, and Canva has a ton of AI already built into it. There's not a day that goes by that I don't use it in some way, shape, or form in the work that I'm doing.
I'm so far behind.
Oh, Larry, you're not that far behind.
That's okay.
No, I think there are a lot of people who know that it's there that just have not figured out a way yet to how do I incorporate this into my everyday. And we're so used to just Googling it. I'll go back to that. You want to know something, you Google it.
As far as a way into AI, looking at that first when you're thinking about doing a search is probably a really good way to introduce its utility into what you do.
Another one of the talking points that you hear around the state is that we are currently working with the worst version of AI that we're ever going to work with. It's the Commodore 64 of AI, where you're playing Pong and just bouncing this ball from one side to the other, and you think that it's amazing. What is it going to be 20 years from now? One of the things I was reading this morning, the large language models at this point, every 5 to 14 months are doubling what they've been able to do. So what GPT-4 can do compared to GPT-3 is amazing. And I just have it pinned there. And just as a reminder that that's where I need to go instead of just typing in Google.
We had a conversation in my office earlier this year about how by the end of the school year, we better be proficient in prompting because of the utility that it will give to our work. And if we're not, we are falling behind because the expectations of productivity in whatever field you're in is going to rise. And if you're not proficient in this tool, you're going to have a hard time maintaining a productivity level that's going to be expected based on what can be done with an easily accessible tool.
Yeah, I've heard the saying is that it's not AI that's going to replace somebody in their job. It's somebody who knows how to use AI that's going to replace somebody in their job. And to your point, we in education are preparing students for the future, and these jobs are already out there. They are already looking for people who can prompt engineer. And if we're not talking about this and starting to get our students thinking about this, then we're not getting them ready for the future that is not even the future. It's currently here.
In good ways and bad.
Yeah.
Like, we got to do this right. Have you seen some of the scenarios that are coming out from Common Sense Media? They're like really these ethical scenarios, and they're great for those conversations that you're talking about with kids, because they're like, you'd have them with teachers like, should we use AI for writing report cards? And just leave it at that. And then that's such a rich, meaty discussion that you can have with teachers, because there is so much ethics involved, I think, of especially when we talk about the creative fields. But there's just a lot of unknown here that we need to kind of work through. And it's messy.
One of the slides that I oftentimes use with groups is it's a sliding scale of students write everything on their own is at the bottom, and at the top, AI basically does it all. And there's in between. And I bring that to the group and, all right, let's look at this. And what do you consider to be cheating? And I've been with some groups that have said that everything above that bottom one of students doing all the work is cheating. And I've been with other groups that have said everything except for the top one of AI doing everything for them is fine. What's your threshold? What do you think is okay? And that is really open to interpretation. There's no one right answer. And there are a lot of groups that we've worked with that have been like, all right, North Ed, what are you going to tell us to do with AI? We're going to offer some suggestions. We'll do some training, but there's no one right size fits all when it comes to this conversation. The buildings, the districts need to have those conversations. Those conversations are happening everywhere in the state right now. But I don't know that there's one group that we can be like, hey, this is our exemplar. This is the one that everybody in the state should be following, because it is changing so fast. At the college level, Michigan State, with all of their AI guidelines, they mark everything as interim because it's changing so fast that you can't really say that this is how it's going to be, because a month later, something new has come out or it's changed somehow, and you've got to be ready to adapt and change on the fly.
Thank you for your work and helping guide us, helping provide that leadership that our region in Manistee that we need.
I would just encourage you to check out our REMC2 Central website. That is where you're going to see our calendar of events that we have, the books that we have to check out, all of our STEAM resources that teachers can borrow from us. We do have some events coming up in April and May that you might want to check out. We're doing some stuff with sketchnoting, kind of that verbal and visual, putting that together. We've got a half day in April that we're doing, April 17th, that you can sign up for that. We have some PSTL in a box stuff that we're doing in May. Promoting STEM through literature is what PSTL stands for. We have all of these books that come ready prepared with lessons and match with materials that we have at REMC that teachers can borrow and start doing STEM things in their classroom where they don't have to really, it already comes ready-made. We're doing a book called Whoosh in May. So we encourage people to join that. It's going to be asynchronous. They're going to get a box of stuff that they get to kind of play with. They'll get a copy of the book and then we kind of come back together and see what they created. And we do have a ton of asynchronous courses going right now, a bunch on Canva. And then we do have one that is focused expressly on that efficiencies, effectiveness, and accommodation so that teachers can get in and use some of these tools. And all the tools that we use in our presentations, we have already gone through and looked at privacy policies because that's a big thing for us at North Ed. I am the person that had to apologize to one of our former tech directors because when I was in the classroom, I was the one who was like, I want to use this thing. Never read privacy policies, just wanted to use something. And now that I'm on the other side, I went back and was like, I am super sorry that I was such a pain.
Man, that's karma. You didn't read any privacy policies as a teacher. Now you read all the privacy policies.
Now I read all the privacy policies. So making sure that they're acceptable for teachers to be able to use, they're not taking and doing anything with the data, that it's age appropriate for our students. Currently, there are not a lot of AI resources that elementary students should even kind of be messing with right now.
Hallelujah.
It's more aimed at middle school, high school, and especially high school. So when you see our presentations or you do one of our PDs, you'll know that those resources that we have in there that we're suggesting to be used, your tech people should not have too many issues with those because the privacy policies have already been approved for North Ed.
All right. Hey, where can they find you online, Danielle?
At Brostrom DA on social.
Pete? Are you on the socials at all?
Yeah. So we do have at RemC2 Central that you can check out. It has a lot of resources that we share out there.
Awesome. TCAP Sloop can be found on LinkedIn, Facebook, the artist formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram. Rate, review the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Podbean, CastBox, Overcast, Bullhorn, or wherever else you get your ear candy. Thanks for listening and inspiring. That's not
I hate libraries.
At all.
Just kidding, Steffi. You're still recording.